My name's Sam, I'm an addict. Thank God this is nearly over. I spent 3 weeks of ruined sleep. I'm trying to, so I don't fly off, I'm trying to ground my feet. It's amazing when your heart's pounding how you forget everything. But yeah, I had had an offer of a ticket for Bruce Springsteen tonight. And it's 2 minutes from where I live. And I thought, yeah, lovely, nice night out, go and see the boss. And I was just sort of arranging it and getting in touch with a friend and going, oh yeah, that'd be great. I used to really like him, got all the albums, I can sing along and all this sort of stuff. And then I realised it was tonight, and I'd like to say that my primary purpose kicked in, but I think the words were, fucking hell, I've got to do that fucking chair. And I was like, oh, should I cancel, should I can't? No. And then I just thought, oh, I'd never hear the end of it from my husband and Tony. I'd never hear the end of it. So, but then, luckily, I do have a higher consciousness. I do. And there's a still, small voice that says, go to Bruce Springsteen. No, it's just really a quiet thing that's hardly noticeable. And it's sort of just this is the path. This is the path to do this. Although I wasn't, tonight I was looking out my window, seeing everyone going into the stadium and thinking, I wish I was going there. But and also, I had an operation yesterday. I got really sore tits. No, I haven't made them bigger or anything like that, no. No, I had, on the morning of the convention, on the Sunday morning, I found a lump in my breast. And, it's quite, normally those sort of things, I'll just act in a way that I would never allow the sort of, the feelings to sort of come up. But that day I did, and I was actually said, I was on the way to the convention, I was like, oh no, I don't feel good. I don't feel, it feels a bit, I can feel it. But I took action immediately, went to the doctors, got an appointment with a specialist, went to a meeting, shared about it, which is, not something I normally share about. And I went out afterwards with a friend, and he was telling me about a story of someone who had really advanced cancer, and that really young, much younger than me, and they survived. And that, in that moment, I was really glad I'd open up, because that actually stopped a lot of fear. I actually got things in perspective. So they think it's fine. I had a couple of moles removed as well. She was sort of like, I'll whip those off as well. And I'm going to get the results next Thursday. But it's kind of, everyone thinks it's fine. I don't think it's anything bad or anything. And I was even sort of laying on the operating table asking if I could look at the lump she'd cut out and see her cutting into it and see what was inside. And what happened was, on the morning before I went to see the specialist, I was pushing my little boy around. I live in Highbury. I was pushing him around Highbury Fields, so I got there every day, and something amazing happened. And I have a few amazing things happen all the time, really, but it's whether I'm listening or aware. And it was a really nice day. It's really green and leafy, and I was pushing his pram, and I'd been through the whole thing of, oh great, I can plan my own funeral. I can choose what music, who's coming, and more importantly, who's not. So I'd been through all of that, and I came to a bit of balance, and I suddenly felt amazing. I felt absolutely energised at being alive. And I had a sort of a revelation that was, in this life that I'm living now, you know, it's important to deepen my spirituality, but it's also important to live my humanity. Now, those words didn't come to me. That was an intellectual take I put on it after. But it was a feeling of, I'm here living in this body. There's, you know, I don't have to live from here upwards. My spirituality is in my body. It's in everyday things. It's in this life now. And I noticed the tiniest little things on the leaves, the grass, the pavement. And I realised in that moment that that was what life is about. All the sort of bits and pieces that I get really tied up in and resentful, and I mean, I'm able to let them go a lot quicker now. And it was just, it was a real moment. And on the way to the specialist, I just felt really sort of in touch with, connected to higher power, higher consciousness. And I use, you know, the word God, which is just a good word to use for that concept. I'm not a religious person of any type, and I don't mean God in any particular way like that. But it was pretty amazing, and I realised that when I was doing a step three, I realised something that was really obvious, but it's not until sometimes when you really feel it and you experience that yourself, that when I cut off from my spirit. And it's really obvious, it's really simple. I read it every day, I've been reading it for years, and before that even. I was just able to deal with finding a love, which is really scary. It's a really scary thing, you know. I tend to minimise a lot of things like this, but you know, I'll be in my 10th year. I'll be 10 years in November, and so many different types of, not types of recovery, but so many different sort of pathways I've been down and ways of doing this program, and I should say, things that are more emphasised at different times, really. You know, this last year, I had a baby a year ago. He was a year on Monday. And I remember when I last had this chair, I was 6 weeks pregnant. I just found out. And so, you know, that's amazing. With my second sponsor, when I did the first step with her the second time round, something happened in my step one when I was doing that I was revealed to me what my dreams were. Now, when I first came into recovery, I heard people talking about it, my wildest dreams, and I never understood. I didn't have anything that I could think of that I'd thought, oh yeah, I'd like to do that, or I want to do this, or that's my dream, or anything. And I could never work it out for years, and got pissed off when people talked about it, and thinking, what the fuck, you know, what is mine then? But with this step one, what happened was, I suppose I was able to reveal myself to the sponsor. I was able to be honest and trust somebody. And it was really simple. And it was to, I wanted a family. I wanted to get married and have a baby or children. And it was really quite sort of, I was quite shocked by it, because I've been completely against that all my life. You know, I always just say to my mum, you know, I don't think you'll come in. I'm not getting married. I don't think you'll be coming to the wedding. If I do, I'll just go off and do it. And da-da-da, I don't want kids and da-da-da and all this sort of stuff. And but then what happened was, over the years, I kind of suppressed it again. Get to the step four, and I just acted out in ways that weren't conducive to having a husband and having a child. So I kind of got scared of it. I got scared of these things that revealed themselves in the beginning. You know, it took me a couple of years to be honest again with myself and with my sponsor, and mostly to be honest with myself and to let it, you know, let it be important, which it was really important. And so this last year has been pretty amazing, you know. And I suppose what I want to talk about is that my recovery this last year has been completely different with having a baby in recovery. And you know, I've had to change things quite a lot, and it's become much more simplified. It's different now, sort of after he was about 10 months, I came out of a bit of a bubble, and it's sort of changing again, my recovery and my program. But really, I had to simplify it. You know, I made sure, and as far as I can tell from other people, talking to parents and carers in recovery, and other women who've had children, I came to a meeting once a week, I was going to 3 or 4. So it seemed at first a bit of a shock, but I made sure every single week I came. To be honest, the week went so fast that it seemed like it was 2 days later. But my sponsor told me to, rather than a commitment that I couldn't keep, is to every single meeting that I went to is to pick up cups, speak to newcomers, tidy away, put chairs away, just put my hand up and just do it anyway. And so I started reading the meditation book every day, and started reading the literature a bit more, which I used to do loads of in the beginning, loads. I used to tuck myself away and read literature. That's all I could do. I never shared for about 9 months. So, you know, these little tiny things. And also, I've had to, you know, and luckily I've built up over the years what I would say is a strong relationship with a higher power, with the God, that I can rely on. I actually rely on it now and take action on it, rather than it being a theory. You know, my little boy came 6 weeks early. He was premature, and I was in Gloucester, and I was in Wiltshire, at my mum's, and I was sat there, and I was eating loads of spaghetti bolognese, and I was saying to my mum, Mum, does beginning contractions feel a bit like period pains? No, you can't have your baby. So I phoned up the hospital. Luckily, I'd taken my antenatal notes with me, and I phoned up the hospital, and they were saying, "Yeah, okay, well, just phone us a bit later if it's still happening, or go to your local nearest hospital." Anyway, I went to. I got my mum's boyfriend drove me to Bath Hospital the next morning, and they got an ambulance for me. They were going to send me back to London because I was having. They were contractions on the monitor. So I was ready to come back with the paramedics in the back of the ambulance with mum, and my waters broke. And they sent me back in the hospital. Now, this is when I got scared. Actually, before then, I was thinking, you know what? This is happening. I accept it. It's going to happen early. I just knew it was going to happen. It was very calm, but I did get scared, and they didn't send me back to London basically because they need a ventilator bed in case the baby can't breathe unassisted. So I got really scared, and my mom, bless her, it's a way of dealing with it. All she could think of was whether her boyfriend had a coffee, whether he was getting charged for the parking, and all this kind of stuff. And I'm just there going, bless her. Sat in like watery blood. Anyway, I experienced another amazing experience. I was in the hospital. I was in the ambulance, and I had to go to Gloucester because they had no beds, like I say. So it was all a bit of a drama. And then they put the sirens on. So I'm going, I was really excited. My friend at home, I was like, listen to this. And I looked out the window, I went, Mum, look, I've been saying I wanted to get into the country for ages. And here I am in the country, it's beautiful, it's all really green. I was like having psychedelic experiences, it was brilliant. Where I'd learnt to accept the situation rather than resist it, this program has taught me that fundamentally, absolutely, 100%. And a bit of yogic breathing, well. And what happens is, as a chemical reaction, is oxytocin's released. So you actually feel quite high. I was just like, wow, this is great. But the birth experience was brilliant. But what happened was, a couple of days later, I sort of came. You have a bit of a 3-day drop in the hormones, so you go a bit sort of mad. And I kind of wondered if I'd have an experience where I had postnatal depression, which I've had, you know, or most addicts that I know have a tendency to, so I kind of knew, I was a bit concerned about that. But I had a massive crash. I walked into the unit and my little boy's bed had gone. So in that instant, I went into a bit of shock. So from then on, it was just the worst. It was a year to this day that I went to, that I had this, I mean, it's the worst I've ever felt. It was such fear. I went into complete paranoia. I had to keep checking with my husband that I had to reveal what was going on in my head to see if it was right or not. Anyway, something amazing happened again. Through someone that someone knows and someone knows, someone sponsee, someone came to pick us up from the hospital and take us to a meeting. So I went to a meeting 4 days after, and I was in such a state. I was in such a terrible state. And I went to the meeting and I just, you know, I'd love to say, oh, I was in a meeting, I felt great. But what happened was these people picked up, they didn't know us. And I hear these stories all the time, and it happened for me, where someone that I don't know came, picked us up, took us to this meeting, God knows where it was. And I went to the meeting and I couldn't listen to anyone, I couldn't listen to the chair, I wasn't interested, I was so terrified and so feared up and anxious. I didn't have a connection with the higher power at that point. It was terrifying. I've never felt that in recovery. And I looked on the floor and it was just, this meeting had, I mean, I sometimes have in the past belittled the cards with the little sayings on and the sayings of NA. It was covered, this floor, covered in all the sayings and all and words from the blue basic text and everywhere. And it was the most brilliant thing for me. I just sat and looked at everything and I felt a bit grounded. And this man came up to me afterwards and he said, he looked at me in the eyes and he was completely calm and completely went, I've had 3 children born in the hospital. 2 of them have been in that ward. They've all survived. They're brilliant there. He's absolutely fine. And I believed him. I didn't believe any of the doctors, anything. And I just, this man from the NA meeting I've never met before, I completely believed him. And from then on, it was sort of like, then I could listen. Then I could hear the doctors and everything saying, I wasn't going, they're saying that because something awful is going to happen and they're not telling me and all that kind of mad stuff, you know. And people from the fellowship, I had people carry me, people were phoning me, and I'm not very good at phoning, especially in situations like that, and I had people phoning me. It was you know, it was quite astounding. And you know, I do slag NA off sometimes, and I have, or have done in the past. I've just been like, fucking hell, I can't stand it, and, you know, but those sort of things, when I'm really, when you're being real about things, and you're grounded again, and you know what's really real, that's, you know, they're the things I remember. Yeah, so like I say, this sort of like over 10 years, things kind of change a lot, and I've had sort of love-hate relationship with NA, but I've always come to meetings. Whether I've been having a fight with someone outside a burger place after this meeting, or not, you know, you kind of, well, I do anyway. I take quite a few steps forward, and then I have a few steps back. Well, can you call them going back? I don't know. It's just human, really, isn't it? I was always fairly violent when I was using, believe it or not. I was always had a few fights at school and everything. I'm from Gosport. I'm from Council Estate. It's called Bridge Mary from Gosport. I'm not actually posh, middle class, or anything. I don't know what's happened. But some identity crisis or something, you know. So, and you know, I've had a very spiritual experience in this fellowship, but also, you know, there's as someone said to me earlier, give them seedy, needy, and greedy stories. It's funny, you know, I've never, over the years, I was never a big sharer of using. so over the years. And I was trying to think why that is. I was a bit of a shy sharer, but also I still didn't want people to know, even amongst all of you lot, like, you know, like, really bad stories. I was still sort of, I didn't want to reveal myself. I felt a lot of shame, actually. You know, I really did for quite a few years, and can slip into that sometimes. You know, it kind of comes up and gets you, doesn't it? But you know, God, I could say my using, I did all these things, but you know, this is when I was clean. But you know, I remember, like, I was nearly 2 years clean, and I got off with a boy I used to babysit with, who had a girlfriend, who had a baby. He was off his head, and it was at his mum's funeral. I mean, you know, it's like, Jesus Christ, like, God forgive me. I don't think my husband knows about that. He doesn't, actually, no. No, I'll go and listen to this straight away after, see what I've said about him. Well, he called me, he'd be fine with it, actually, he calls me a wild buck. For 3 years, I thought he was calling me a wild buck, because he's from up north. I was like, what's a wild buck? Like Marquis de Sade or Jackie Collins' racy novel or something, I don't know. But you know, you don't come perfect, or I don't become perfect. Now, I thought that I probably would when I came into NA. I did, actually. It's really weird to think of it now. It seems so naive. It's so naive, and yet I really believe that once I had put down the drugs, everything would be, I don't know what, but just be...
kosher.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. And there would be no kind of life problems or something. I don't know. It was, you know, that strange. I think a lot of people have it. And, you know, life isn't like that. And what I've learned is, which is the most amazing thing I've learned in recovery, is I love that saying, through our inability to accept personal responsibilities, we're actually creating our own problems. I love that. That just sums a lot of things up for me in using and in early recovery and in recovery now. And one thing I've learned, and it's a massive thing in my step 4 and 5, it was a huge thing about my lack of responsibility and my avoidance and running away, and everything was tied back to it. And now I have massive responsibilities, and I love it. I throw myself into it, I surrendered to it, and accepted, and in doing that I have great freedom to live the life I want. I've taken risks, I've been really honest. You know, someone said to me once, oh, things have been really easy for you, haven't they? They've all just slipped into place. I'm like, fuck off. Envy. Sort it out. Do your step 4 in columns and you'll get to it. But it hadn't been, you know, as I say in the beginning, you know, what my dreams were, that was a hard thing to get to. It's not like I just, oh yeah, I kept clean and I did my recovery and then I met someone and we got married and had a baby. You know, I had to really be honest and take risks. And that started with my sponsor. I still remember a conversation I had with her years and years ago and how amazing this woman was. And how she helped me just admit things, simple things, you know. Because I'd never, you know, I've never been married, never had a relationship or anything like that. I mean, you know, I lived with someone when I was about 23, but, you know, it's kind of like with all his brothers and their girlfriends, and there's a gun under the sofa and there's loads of coke, and it's like, off your head, it's not really living with somebody, is it? But I had a great time in the beginning of using, I really did. Yeah, it was brilliant. I was very lucky to be part of a massive, what it is now, music and cultural scene. And right, I decided to go out with one of the DJs. So, yeah, right in the middle of it all. So that was amazing. But, you know, I still, though, there were consequences when I look back, you know, I was paralysed for about 12 hours. My boyfriend was having an asthma attack, which I couldn't do anything about. And luckily someone heard it. You know, I was shuffling along the streets, trying to get to Sainsbury's or whatever it was at the time, and lots of physical, you know. And then throughout my history of using, it's peppered with memories I have now of people popping up. Are you all right? You don't need to be doing this. What are you doing? You need to sort this out. You know, right from a really young age, really, you know, and as the addiction progressed, I mean, when I talk about this now, I'm talking about my outside circumstances here, but, you know, to sum it up, I came to London, I came to do a degree, which I just about got, God knows how. I just decided to go out to all the clubs. That was my, you know, I used to sit in Gosport in Bridgemary in my bedroom, reading New Sounds, New Styles, looking at everyone in it. Came to London, came up to all the clubs, and thought, yes! It was, you know, and then I started modelling at one point, which is really seedy. Seems glamorous on the outside, but, well, the bit I was involved with was seedy anyway, probably. But, and then I went from sort of, yeah, I mean, as I say, I never worked until I was about 25, what I call a so-called proper job, because that was only for a little while. I was signing on as well and getting cash, so it wasn't really... I decided early on that signing on was the way to go and getting loans, so I never had to work. I'm still paying off things now. And, you know, what happened was, I was 33 when I came to recovery, and I was... I had a flat on Labbot Grove, and I was getting housing benefit, and this is where I had my rock bottom, and it was, you know, I had no, the reading today is talking about loneliness versus lonely, and the loneliness of using, and that's, you know, and I couldn't believe that I was that lonely, you know, I'd got to that place, and, you know, by that time, it wasn't, I couldn't afford any drugs, I was drinking 199 bottles of sherry, I mean, you know, that's really sad. It's my flat was covered in bottles, and when I could get the old wrap of anything, that was still, you know, it was, when you look back, I can't believe my life now. So it's sort of, you know, I used for 18 years. It's quite a long time, really, I suppose. And I got 12-step by a man, a gay man. And that was pretty amazing, actually. I found some literature. I was working in this shop, and I found some literature, and everyone was in NA. And I was, like, meeting all these people, going... And they all seemed really, weird, you know. It's just, like, going... It's really suspicious. Something about these people. I'm not sure if I like it or not. And I found some literature, and I was reading it. And he sort of, I think he found me reading it, and he was doing the Who is an Addict, you know, the list of things and everything. And I was trying to justify, always justifying, making up stories, going, no, but you don't. And he was just there going, right, okay. And I ended up going to meet him with him. I was lucky enough to experience something when I first went to a meeting that it was candlelit, which was really nice, because I felt, you know, you feel like someone's, at that time, faxed through some details about you. And I felt something. I did have a feeling of, I've come somewhere that I want to be, I need to be. And I had a feeling I'd be here, you know, I knew I'd come back, sort of thing. I feel lucky. I feel really lucky that I had that. You know, I had spent quite a few years trying to stop using, though. I didn't come to NA, but lots of other different ways. And, you know, that realisation, when you realise you can't stop using. I suppose I felt resigned. Christ. Sorry. It's all right, I felt quite resigned to that life. I, at that point, I had no hope. I couldn't see anything. I saw it in my first meeting. And you know, the steps, I suppose you work the steps, I work them, as in I write them, my sponsor sets one, I write it, I read it to her, go on to the next one. But then there's sort of work in the steps where I can incorporate the concepts of it into my life. Lots of spontaneous things have happened through work in the steps, rather than just sort of like this set up thing that's going to happen, or spontaneous things in ways I hadn't imagined. Like when I was coming up to do the step, when I was doing step 8 and 9, I was sharing in a meeting the other day that my mum's second husband, you know, we lived a nightmare with him for 5 years. It was just a nightmare, absolutely, you know. And I was doing my step 8 and 9, and I went into a workshop, a yoga workshop, and it was to do with the heart, the cardiovascular system and the lungs and everything. So we were learning all about that, but he was talking about an energetic level of the heart opening up, and I just thought of a new sort of thing. Oh, that home is where the heart is. It gives it a new meaning. And when I came out of the meeting, there was a message from my mum, and she said, Owen, that's his name, has suffered a massive heart attack. And I was saying how I thought when I heard that news I was going to cheer, and I didn't. I had compassion for this man who's lived this life with this hateful heart, and dying for me. He died a few days later. Now, what I forgot actually in that meeting was you said something, I think, about everyone I have a resentment against, I've harmed in some way. Now, he wasn't on my resentment list. I mean, my harms list. He was on my resentment list, of course. But he wasn't on the men's list, sorry. And I just realised it as you were sharing. And then I thought, well, how did I harm him? But I suppose, you know, me and my sister planned to poison him. So, you know... And the only reason I didn't go ahead with it is because quite like cold-heartedly when I was that young, because I didn't want to go to jail, and that was it. You know, I just didn't want to have the consequences. So, yeah. Thank you. You know, every time I come up to a new step, I have a moment of what it's about. Really clearly, I understand it on a level that I can't intellectualise, and then I lose it, and then I work the steps and write it. I do a lot of writing and reading, which I like anyway, so that's what I do in my steps. You don't always have to. And I lose it, and I get angry, and I'm going, oh God, what am I doing this for? What does all this mean? And then it's sort of like the more I write, the more I do the step, the more it comes back to me. Then at the end, I have an inkling of the next step, and it's like this beautiful sort of dance that all, you know, all makes sense. And you know, one of the things I think recovery does is I've changed. I think about other people. That's one of the biggest changes. I can think about other people. And the other thing of taking responsibility. It's just, I can't explain the feeling of throwing myself into responsibilities of life on life's terms. It just gives such freedom. As soon as I have any kind of inkling of resistance, or my head wants to go somewhere else, or think I should be living another life or something like that, you know, I have to write a gratitude list. My dreams have come true. Now, they might not be everyone's dreams, but, you know, some people want to be famous, or want to be an actor. There's a lot of people in recovery who want to do counselling or acting. But, That's what we're a bit like, really. I can understand the acting bit. It's a bit like, I don't know if anyone's seen that programme Titty Bang Bang. Has anyone seen that?
Yeah.
There's a character who goes, "Don't look at me, I'm shy." It's a bit like that, really. That's how I felt a bit like doing this chair. Like, I didn't want to do it, and I said no about 8 times. But then I did want to do it, because I thought, if it goes another year, I know a commitment, and I've not done it. Anyway, I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thanks.